coming to you live from Raleigh, North Carolina. It's another episode of Album Swap. Now here's Brian McDonald and Fred Deese Jr.
Welcome to Season 2 of Album Swap. I'm your host, Brian McDonald, along with Fred Deese Jr.
Howdy, howdy.
Fred?
We're back.
It's been like, I don't know, a couple years. What the hell happened? Who knows?
It feels like COVID. It's been a couple years.
Yeah. COVID. Fred's in a band now, rising
in a band
through the Southeast.
Yeah. That was pre-pandemic.
Pre-pandemic.
That was the reason. That's right.
We're going to blame Fred on the whole thing.
Started the hiatus.
Fred started a band, broke up the consistency of the awesomeness that we were doing on this. But anyway, we're back. For those of you that are new, we're actually putting this on YouTube for the first time ever. And basically the premise of this is Fred and I give each other an album that we really like. And typically we try to find something the other person hasn't listened to before. And have them listen to it, and then we come back here and swap our opinions.
We swap them. After we swap the albums, we swap the opinions.
We swap opinions. We'll give you a little background, and then what we like to call the GBB. Fred, what's that?
The good, the bad, and the boogie.
So, without wasting any more time, I gave Fred actually an album that is fairly brand new. It's the latest from longtime heavy metal favorites from down under, AC/DC. Power Up. That's right. Power Up from AC/DC.
Great album. It was a great album. It was the 16th album they've released internationally. I think they've done 17 total in Australia. But this, I think the most important part about this album is that it is a tribute to Malcolm Young. So Malcolm Young, brother of Angus Young, he was the rhythm guitarist, founding member of AC/DC, and he passed away in 2017. So kind of like what they did with Back to Black, that was like their kind of tribute, their so long to Bon Scott when he passed away. This was the same thing with Malcolm. So all the songs are credited to Malcolm and Angus Young because they basically just went to the vault and just pulled a bunch of songs that they hadn't recorded before. So you get that. I mean, it is nothing but an AC/DC album, right? The DNA is AC/DC. I mean, it is definitely that. But also this was a time where the guys had broken up. I think they kind of, Brian, the lead singer, Brian Johnson, he left, 2014? He like couldn't hear or something, right? His ears were messed up.
Yeah.
But
Angus.
Or they had Axl Rose.
Axl Rose came in and sang on the tour.
Yeah, last 10 shows, I think, finished out the tour. And then the bassist left for health reasons. I think drummer left because he conspired against.
He tried to kill somebody, I think.
He tried to have somebody killed. So those three guys left. It was basically just Angus. So they weren't really doing. They weren't really AC/DC anymore.
Yeah.
And then after Malcolm died in 2017, 2018 comes, and there's talk that they were going to be recording. They were really secretive about it, but they were recording at Bryan Adams's studio, recording.
Nice.
Yeah, Summer 69, rock and roll. and so they recorded there, I think, over 6 weeks, knocked it out pretty quickly, and it came out November of last year, right? 2020?
Yeah.
It was one of the
right at the end of the
bright
year.
Spots. Yeah. One of the few bright spots of 2020 was this album.
Admit it was seeing it was out there. I saw a few people on Facebook, and they consistently put out a lot of albums over the years, but none of them have been as good or maybe as one big hit, Thunderstruck or something like that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and this one is. I mean, you can tell. I read up on the album after I had listened to it, so. Finding out that they had just really dug into the bin and got these old songs, it really kind of made sense then. Once now that makes complete sense. But it is AC/DC to a T.
Yeah, I agree. It's straight up old school AC/DC, no bullshit.
Yeah, no BS.
No BS.
Yeah, so I'm excited to get my GBB on that one. And the album that I gave you is called Black Messiah. By D'Angelo and the Vanguard.
Sometimes listed as just D'Angelo.
It's his album. This is considered a D'Angelo album. He's just a nice dude. You could put Vanguard on the album too. Those dudes are, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was his third studio album. Came out in 2014. And I actually wrote that right up front that it was D'Angelo and the Vanguard, which I guess for him, since he is fairly talented and multi-instrumentalist, he can pretty much just put together a band as he needs. So that's usually for touring and then maybe to fill in the gaps on recording. It was interesting. I looked at kind of where there was recorded at a lot of different studios as well, including the famous Record Plant where, you know, Hotel California, Fleetwood Mac's Rumors, Sly and the Family Stone, there's a riot going on, which has got like a lot of comparisons to, which I'll talk a little bit about during the GBB section.
GBB.
But yeah, yeah. And GBB. fun fact about the Record Plant, that we've had past album swap artists record albums there, including the Beastie Boys, Neil Young, and Raging Slab. So check out those.
Interesting.
This album was interesting in that it followed like a 14-year hiatus after the release of his second album, Voodoo, in 2000. So basically, he became uncomfortable kind of with his status as a sex symbol. He gained a bunch of weight, kind of looked unhealthy, and he kind of got out of the public eye. This started a lot of conspiracy and rumors, you know, and you know, all that stuff flying. And then he had a couple tragic things happen. One, his best friend died of suicide, committed suicide. He started drinking, and it resulted in like his tour being scrapped and a lot of releases being pushed off. Then his girlfriend leaves him.
Yeah, D'Angelo had a rough run.
Yeah, yeah. He got out of touch with his family. And I mean, these things can tend to happen when you got that. He parted ways with his management team. And then in 2005, he gets busted, right? He gets charged with marijuana and cocaine possession. And then later that year in 2000, he is sentenced. After being sentenced on drug charges, he gets in an accident. And there's rumors that like he's critically injured, you know, and all this stuff. But a week later, they're like, okay, he's fine. So he finally checks into rehab, gets clean, does a few collaborations with like Snoop Dogg, Common, Q-Tip, right? And is able to put out this album. And even that took like a long time.
14 like years, they, right?
Yeah, like 2 years. Like he got in, like Questlove sneaked off a sample of it, and then that got people upset, or they got upset at each other.
He like leaked it, right? He leaked it.
Australian radio, yeah, like Australian radio show. So yeah, like and then like new management comes in and all that stuff. So they finally got to record this. He actually was able to go out on tour in Europe and like play some of the tracks and kind of test it out before the album actually gets released. Long and slog, you know, path to get this out. And it paid off, right?
Almost killed him. You
know? Yeah. I mean, almost killed him. But this album debuted at like number 5, it sold over 100,000 copies in the first week. It got tons of great reviews, got a Metacritic score of 85, which is always strong. Like Rolling Stone had a good quote where it was like this avant soul dream palace and like kind of warm, expansive masterpiece, which I think that second
half. I love that.
Weird, like yeah, warm, expensive masterpiece. I was like, what does that really mean? You know. But anyway, you know, he definitely has a lot of comparisons to Sly and the Family Stone, and kind of has like influences coming in from like rock and funk of past in this, but gives it his own spin to say the least. Yeah, and so I do have to admit, this is an artist I had heard his name maybe from this recording or others, but if you would ask me to tell you the name of any of his songs, I wouldn't have been able to. So this was a very kind of fresh listen for me of an artist that's got some work out, but
that's why we swap, Ryan. That's why we swap, dude.
True.
Boom.
True.
And also D'Angelo's the album before this, Voodoo. Woo.
That I know. Now I'm going to have to go back and listen to that.
It is fire. There's a song called Chicken Grease on it that it is impossible not to start bumping to it. It is as good as a song can get.
All right, so now it's time.
It's got a lot of boogie in it, you know what I mean?
It's time for that. It's time for the good, the bad, and the boogie.
Do it. Okay, so the good, the bad, and the boogie. And these things will also say, like, I mean, you know, good, bad, and boogie can mean a lot of different things, right? So this can change the way we kind of define good, bad, and boogie can change album to album, maybe even within the own GBB of the album. So let's see. So good. So this album, it's almost easier to explain the good with the bad. So maybe I'll do that. So because there's no rules here. You don't have to go in order. Because this will help kind of explain it. So my bad was kind of the first three songs of the album. They're not bad. I'm not saying that they're bad. They're like straight ahead AC/DC. But it felt, whereas some of the other songs have a little more like intricacies to it, maybe a riff here or a little drum beat there or another vocalist coming in sounding like he's in Primus or something. I mean, there's a couple other things that I like about the other songs. These first three, my only takeaway was, well, this is AC/DC. I mean, when I got to track four, I wasn't pumped about it. I think I was telling you that. I just wasn't that excited because I was like, this sounds like a lot of these other AC/DC albums that we've gotten over the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years that have just been like, all right, you know, it's AC/DC. Yeah, it was just all right. And so that would be my bad. Now, I went through, listened to it the second time. I like it a little bit more, but I still, for the start of an album, it didn't get me excited. Like,
So not even a shot in the dark? See, I think a shot in the dark is like classic AC/DC.
I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it. I didn't love it. So, I mean, it is your typical AC/DC song that you would have gotten on the radio, right? And that's not what I'm here for anymore. Now with all these things said, I really, really like the album a ton. So this isn't like really a knock on it as much as it just, like I said, I'm kind of over the just radio AC/DC from.
Oh yeah. Overplayed
from the 90s, right? Yeah, and so those are the vibes I was getting. So that would be my bad.
Yeah.
My good is kind of because of the bad. So starting on track six, which is Witch's Spell.
Oh yeah.
So starting from there and going all the way to the end of this album, and finishing with Code Red, which I think is my favorite song on the album.
Well, yeah, I like this song a lot, actually. Witch's Spell.
Witch's Spell is great. Whenever I heard this was like maybe my favorite song on the album to that point. So I was like, oh, this is starting to give me hope, kind of. You're right. Like, I was getting excited, and then it finished. Every single one is just disgusting. Wild Reputation. One of the best songs on the album, easily.
Yeah, I agree. This is really good. And again, that's class. To me, I think what really makes this album is like Angus coming in with that signature sound, Phil Rudd just backing it up with those just powerful basic drums,
classic AC/DC.
Yeah, Brian Johnson's vocals sound great, actually.
Yeah, classic, classic. And then you get down like track number 11, right? Money Shot. Money Shot is a classic AC/DC like song name. They always had like some sexual innuendos or drug innuendos in their name, like always. So Money Shot, I mean, that's perfect. But I mean, so all of those songs in that little run is what I'm here for, because it sounded fresh. It sounded like classic AC/DC, but it sounded fresh. Code Red though, Code Red might be my favorite song on the album.
They always tend to end their albums with a really strong song that's never going to be like a huge hit, but is just like a dirty bluesy.
Yep, and punches like this album is 12 tracks of just punches, just one punch after one punch after one punch after one.
Rock and roll, man.
It is rock.
No BS, rock and roll.
No BS, rock and roll.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And I love ending an album like strong like that. I mean, it's just that. So yeah, so that is my good, and it's a very good. My boogie, which I am so pumped about this song. I'm so pumped to talk about this song, is track number 4, Through the Mist of Time.
Oh, yeah.
Which, number one, that is not a classic AC/DC title.
No.
Through the Mist of Time does not sound like something AC/DC come up.
Sounds more like a Metallica song.
Yeah, and now, so listening to this song, I get, like, so many shades of, like, maybe Bruce Springsteen or, like, John Fogerty. Listen to this song and tell me you don't hear John Fogerty.
Dude, what this song reminds me of is, like, the stuff they did for Maximum Drive, Overdrive. Like, Sink the Pink and, like, Ride On and some of that stuff, which I know some of those are Bon Scott, but...
The man.
I do like it because, like, again, his vocals sound fantastic.
Sounds great.
That classic kind of Angus progression of guitar.
After My Bad, right? Those first three songs, I listened to this and I was like, well, I mean, like, my ears perked up because it sounded very different. The name of the song, very different. And then 5 is good. 5's a solid song, but then 6 started this run. It was just it wasn't a run, it was a tear. A tear.
And it's just, that's funny.
It left me fully, like, just fully satisfied. Like seriously, it's like when you eat a really good meal and you didn't take one bite too many, you know what I mean? Yeah, the right amount. It was just an awesome meal. That's what this was. Just on point. It hit the spot.
And then I also think Phil Rudd on drums is what really makes them too, because if you look at some of their efforts that aren't that great, it's when they had different drummers on. Yeah, Phil's like just he's you know, it's funny because, like, I don't know if you really classify him as heavy metal, even though they are, like, every heavy metal band person loves them.
Sure.
You know, I've always said they're more hard rock, but to me, like, that's what it is. It's never like a drum solo or like double bass or anything like that. It's like
4 on the floor. That's
gonna lay this down. Driving. Yep. Exactly. We're going to drive this song. We got a singer out here that knows how to, like, lay it down. And so,
know what you are and do what you do. Do it well. That's what they've been doing for a long time.
Yeah.
15 albums internationally. So, they did it again. And you can also tell there's a bit of, I don't know about passion, but there's some love there. You can tell they're doing it for somebody. I mean, it does seem very, very much like a tribute.
I think Angus wanted to do something for his brother, and, you know, he has his nephew now playing guitar, playing rhythm guitar. So it's still, you know, the young family band to a certain extent. But I think, like, they were just like, we're not done yet. We still got a couple of really good albums left in us, and we're going to crank them out. And that's awesome to see, because a lot of time bands, when they hit like a 30 or 25 year mark, you know, it's hard putting out album number 7 or 8 that still kicks butt, you know, when you have that long of a career. So anyway, well, that is Power Up.
Great album. Everybody check it out. Power Up. And they spell a little different too. You know, they do like P, it's like PWR up UP. And then they do like a PW with the lightning bolt up UP.
Yeah. They did a lot of, they did a lot of cool, we'll have to see if we can find something that's shared out on social accounts. They did like a lot of cool ads for it, like on some of the social networks and stuff, and I think they were like labels and stuff, like High Voltage labels or something.
Check it out.
Classic.
Power Up, AC/DC.
Let's hope they tour, if Brian Johnson can do it.
Get me back to concerts.
Yeah.
All right, D'Angelo, tell me about the good, the bad, and the boogie.
All right. So the good, the bad, and the boogie. So I guess, kind of like you, when I first listened to this, it didn't really grab me.
This is one you got to listen to a couple of times. It's a,
yeah, yeah.
There's a lot. There's a complex album. There's a lot to unpackage.
And so I have to admit, it didn't grab me at first, because it's really layered, right, on the vocals. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Multi-vocal. Well,
And so at first I was just kind of like, I don't know. You know, like, I heard this, like, really kind of cool jazz sounds in the background, but then it's like it almost, like, is it too much layering of vocals, right? And so I have to admit, I did go and listen to the live versions of these songs. He did a Spotify sessions.
Ooh.
That made me really appreciate what he did on the album more, been listening to the album several times.
Dude is he's a special musician. I mean, yeah. He's up there with like Prince as far as being able to do it all.
So, and this brought a light bulb moment to me, in that I know when we were, you said, or I remember when we were reviewing the Screaming Trees, you said, you're like, I don't get his voice. Like, I don't see like the passion that you have for it. And it made me realize that sometimes you really do have to maybe see it live or hear it live.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Because the studio can kind of like subdue it down and all that. So I did like listening to those live tracks, the Spotify sessions. I think he did like 4 songs. And I think it brought out the kind of jazzy, like the horns and the jazz guitar a little bit and the piano a little bit more. Only because I feel like he's got like so much vocal, like the vocals are kind of just all on top of it. So sometimes it was like hard to hear the music a little bit or hear kind of like some of the subtleness they're doing. And that's the thing when you have like that jazzy kind of funk
layers
mixed in real light and you're keeping room for the vocals. You sometimes you're like, well, wow, he's doing something really cool in that piano. I want to kind of hear it.
Yeah, and layers, man. It's all about the layers.
Well, and that's where the live versions are great, because then his voice is really probably even coming out even more.
It's a great point.
And it's not just, these like 8 layers that they're recording and stuff like that, which that was the other thing.
With the tightest rhythm section, though.
So I do think, though, that sometimes, they can get in the studio and overproduce. So I was glad to hear the live tracks and kind of get more of like the raw emotion coming out of that song. So my good, bad, and the boogie would be, the good is really like his talent, like and like I kind of covered before, the live version. It really got me to kind of hear like that kind of groovy soul he had on this album. And then like the other thing I liked was like even like some of the things like scatting, like on the songs like Back to the Future and Sugar Daddy. That's where that like multi-vocal worked really well, I thought.
Sure.
So the bad would be really just like at first listen, I didn't really, like I said, I didn't like the vocals that much. And sometimes it kind of felt like there was an effect. And I don't know if they're trying to do that on purpose to kind of just show like, you know, hey, we can do, and cause you at this time you got what, like auto-tune and all that other crap out on the recording scene and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and he was big about like playing with, you know, especially with his keyboard, like different effects, like coming up with his own patches and stuff. He very much up in that upper level as far as creativity and unique creativity. A lot of those sounds are like really unique, unique to him and his sound.
The quality was kind of good, but the layering, it was cool. But like I said, to me, it didn't grab me after a few listens. And in fact, I compared it to nothing comes out and jumps you like sometimes when you're like with Fred at a live show and he's kind of all happy and giving you hugs and jumping up and down. Which is a great thing.
Big high fiver too.
Big high fiver. That's right. That's right.
Big high five.
So I didn't get that kind of emotion at first, but when I went back and listened to the tracks after listening to the live tracks, I could kind of hear that bonus that I kind of glazed over the first time.
Sure.
And so that kind of brings me to my boogie.
Yeah, and I mean the artist that he had on this. I mean, people, a lot of listeners know who Questlove is. You know, with the Roots, he was the drummer on the album. Pino Palladino on bass, who's currently playing with The Who, and what he's played, he plays with John Mayer. I mean, he played on Voodoo, the D'Angelo's album before this. Pino Palladino, he's like 6'8", but he has an unbelievable bassist. And then Isaiah Sharkey on guitar, who's also played kind of in that John Mayer crowd, but he is just an absolute beast on the guitar. So the talent, I mean, D'Angelo had the all-star squad with him for sure.
Yeah. And thank you for mentioning that. I just kind of mentioned Questlove, but like, yeah, he definitely had this like extremely strong, ensemble to kind of help fulfill his vision. And I think that's always tough too, because sometimes like when you can do everything yourself, the hardest thing is to get everybody to kind of get on the same page as you.
Yeah.
In a short amount of time. And
yeah. And I think one of his earlier attempts to get this album started, like right after 2000, he tried to do every single instrument. Like he tried to do it all, and it kind of came out.
Yeah.
Maybe sounding unfinished a little bit. And so that was, I'm pretty sure the genesis of what became Black Messiah, you know, just because, I mean, it's tough for you to do every single thing. So he just goes and gets, you know, just the all-star team.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first thing I really liked about this was the door, which one of the things I thought was really cool was that it's got whistling in it, which
it's awesome, right?
Don't hear that in much modern popular music, right?
I think whistling just makes you feel good. Hearing somebody whistle, you just feel good.
Yeah, and he's got kind of like a slow kind of twang almost here, this, you know, album, like back porch music. Oh, and the hand clap too. That's what I like. And then you've got the multi-layer vocals coming in. And then the lyrics on
this. It's definitely a soul. It's soul, but it's got a lot of that funk in there too.
Oh, like I said, it's got twang. He's got. Yeah. And you know, it's this whole like song about a lover kind of getting broken up with in a way, and I love that. I told you once, but twice, you wasn't very nice. So like, there's the door.
Yeah,
get out.
Hey, a lot of boogie. There's a lot of boogie. When you're whistling, there's a lot of boogie in the whistle.
There's that. There's that kind of like that little acoustic guitar, you know, little love slap it on it.
It's, the acoustic it guitar great. in Really Love is awesome.
And then the other thing that I really dug was A Thousand Deaths. So this song reminded me a bit of like Public Enemy.
Yeah.
You know, not just on absolutely like the vocals,
absolutely,
but Questlove's drums. And especially after he kind of fades out at the end. And like the beat, like he keeps laying this beat until everything drops off. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It gets busy.
Oh yeah.
Right? It's like Jimi Hendrix is in there, you know, there's all kinds of stuff going on. And then at the very end, it's just Questlove dropping that beat.
Right.
Dropping that beat.
And Pino, that's Pino Palladino with that.
Yeah, and Pino.
Hitting that bass note. Fan it.
So I thought this was a really just kick ass song.
And that's the thing is the rhythm section throughout this entire album, like you said, it goes a lot of places. It seems busy, but there is always the rhythm is tight throughout the entire. It's like it's just interwoven throughout the entire album.
Yeah,
just tight rhythm section, drums and bass.
So then my other boogie was Betray My Heart.
Nice.
And again, I really like the live version of this with the kind of keyboard and guitar kind of jazzy intro. I like the progression of the song a lot. I like he's got that block just keeping the beat, you know.
Yeah, I love a good block sound.
Yeah. This is a groovy. This is my groovy bachelor pad music right here.
Yeah. You know? You got a playlist? Is that a playlist you got?
That's just, you know, yeah. That's like a genre for me. You know?
Gotcha.
But yeah, and it's not complex at all, really. It's really kind of just repeating this simple kind of, you know, short piece over and over.
That blocks
and then
like
he just kind of layers it and layers it. But yeah, and like I said, all to me the live layers version really comes off the page. Like
sure.
Then excuse me, my final one was Sugar Daddy.
Sugar.
And again, just the percussion intro.
I mean,
yeah, this is old school, man. This is
dirty,
like
dirty.
Yeah, this is old school dirty. So I thought this song like worked really well. And again, I think it like here where he's got a lot of vocals coming in, it's not too much, you know.
Right.
It kind of like the layering works really well on this one. And again, the live version on this is, you know, phenomenal.
That's awesome. That is cool. I'm gonna play this as soon as we stop recording. I'm gonna play this.
And then, all right, so that part right there, to me, that reminds me of like Sly and some of that stuff.
Yes, 100%. And
I think that's an interesting comparison because that album by There's a Riot Going On is a lot different than what most people remember Sly's stuff, which is much more like upbeat, kind of, you know, funky, you know, dance music. And to me, there's a riot going on, kind of like it's still funky and stuff, but like it takes a much more serious kind of tone to it, and it's not just like you know dance to the music and some of that earlier stuff he had,
right?
And so I do like that comparison too, because I think he seems I don't know if Sly ever had as much trouble with his personal life and stuff like that. I don't think he has.
I think Sly's living in a van under a bridge now. So
is he?
I'm pretty sure.
I thought he was just like retired years ago and said screw performing because
I read some article recently actually.
I think
we'll have to fact check. We'll get back to this in the next episode.
That's right. Fred, you're confirm whether or not confirming if Sly's living in a van down by the river.
Yep. Okay. I'm almost 99% sure that I read an article on it. So
well, that sucks.
We'll provide that link and an update on the next episode.
That is Black Messiah. Really good diss. Thank you for sharing that with me and our listeners, Fred.
Swap.
So that's it. The first ever recorded visually or video recording.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. So we'll be back our next episode with two more albums.
Oh, I'm excited. I don't even know what's going to be yet.
Oh, yeah. It's good. And there's a tie-in from this.
You already show. Know yours. You already know yours. Yes. Yeah, I don't know mine yet.
Once we get done with this, we'll... Oh, really?
No. I mean, I've got some ideas, but I needed my focus
on... I have a list.
My focus is on this. Oh, wow.
I keep telling you there's a list.
I kind of like to... I like to let the moment lead.
Now, let me put it this way. This week, I had four moments that new things got added to that list and others came off. It's not just a list that I just wrote down one day. It started with that. But it's now kind of metamorphosed into its own life.
Well, consider me impressed.
Well, until the next episode, I'm Brian McDonald.
I'm Fred Dees.
And we'll see you on the swap.
See you on the swap.
You have been listening to Album Swap. Visit albumswap.net for all the latest episodes.